welcome back to Shakedown Shan. I know it's been a little while. It's been a crazy, crazy summer. We live in Saratoga. Well, my producer here, Rick, he lives in Saratoga, and he does. He works at the racetrack, so his summer's just been go, 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 go. Yes. And then where I work, we service a lot of the people that bring their horses in for the racetrack, and a lot of people that fly in privately to the airport over here in Saratoga. And we get them going and everything. And we had a very busy weekend for Travers Weekend.
I can imagine.
We did something like, I think like 17,000 in sales just for the weekend.
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And we were just so, so, so busy.
It's amazing how many jets fly into that little airport in Balsas Spa.
Crazy.
And where they come from. I mean, you get all these sheiks that fly in, and you know, all the people from all over the world that, especially at the sales, that want to buy the horses.
Mm-hmm.
Horse that came in second in the Traverse, they paid $3 million for that horse at the sales. I mean, there was some big money at
lots of big money.
Did you go to the sales?
Nope.
Okay. They you know, they have them at Fazek Tipton there on East Avenue. I think they sold a horse for almost $2 million to a baby horse. I mean, these are like little horses that a lot of money spent.
Yeah, lots of money spent. So, busy weekend, busy summer. I've been doing a lot of stuff with the Cub Scouts. We stayed overnight on a battleship in Massachusetts. That was fun.
That's
interesting.
Neat.
It was the USS Massachusetts.
Neat.
Yep. She was in like 37 conflicts or battles or something like that. And like 4 or 5 different wars. I know she was in World War II, Vietnam War, the Korean conflict. She was in Pearl Harbor when that was going on. It was really, really neat to see that part. It's part of history. So
yeah.
We stayed overnight on it in the Navy bunks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Are they still small?
Yeah, they're super, super small, and they're like stacked 4 high.
Yeah.
Yep. And there's like no room to even sit up.
No, I know. I always thought it was built for short people.
yeah.
You get on the clipper ships and Mystic, you know, and you wonder how they slept in those things. But
yeah, tight spaces everywhere.
Yeah, here you're a soccer mom now, huh?
Yes. Yeah, so now Noah's starting soccer today.
Yeah.
So he's at practice right now. And he'll be doing practices twice a week and games on Saturdays. And, yeah.
Now it starts.
Yep, now it starts. Cub Scouts, soccer, fun, on the run all the time. So today's going to be a little bit of a shorter episode just because our crazy, crazy schedules. And I have a few good things here for you. And it's great to be back. And as soon as all this craziness dies down, we will be back on a regular basis like we were before. And so this first thing I have here is from Reason.com. I'm sure a lot of you in the libertarian world know about Reason Magazine. A lot of great little short little articles. And so this is on the new farming bill. And it's titled, "The New Farm Bill is Going to Suck Just Like the Last One, and the One Before That, and the One Before That." And I'm sure you guys are familiar with the fact that we subsidize farmers a lot in this country. And it started back, I think, in the Dust Bowl, like around that time. I could be wrong. Someone fact check me. But
probably did. I
want to get censored off Facebook for misinformation. But anyway, we had to really boom the farmers. And so, of course, the government's answer to that was, oh, let's subsidize them. And so anyway, here we are. Blah, 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 blah. All right. So the farm bill is currently winding its way through Congress. Members of a joint House-Senate conference committee are beginning work to redo this House and Senate versions of the bill before bringing the finished product to a vote by the end of September. However, the finished product turns out Whether a perfect marriage or one that nods more to the House or Senate version, this year's farm bill will suck, just like the last one and the one before that and the one before that. There was hope, thanks to bipartisan support, that Congress would cap farm subsidies in the form of taxpayer-subsidized crop insurance paid to many of America's wealthiest farmers. As I am lamented earlier this year, those hopes were already on life support. Now they're dead. An unusual coalition of libertarians, free marketers, and environmentalists hoped this farm bill cycle would be the one to rein in subsidies for wealthy farmers, Politico reported this week. Despite good efforts, the coalition's efforts were for naught. It's worth noting, though, that libertarians, free marketers, including libertarians, and environmentalists banding together to fight farm bills that suck isn't the least bit unusual. These groups work together to fight back against wasteful farm bill excess every 5 years, as I've noted many times, including in this 2012 column in my recent book, Biting the Hand That Feeds Us. Who was this by?
You know, I have to interject something. You were correct about
the Dust Bowl.
It was started in 1933 by FDR.
Our favorite socialist president.
Yes, really.
FDR, he was great. He wasn't that great, but school likes to teach you he was great.
Yeah.
So in any case, the coalition was no match, as Politico reported elsewhere, for a more powerful coalition, one featuring top Democratic and Republican leadership in the House of Representatives, including Speaker Paul Ryan, Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, and Agricultural Committee Chairman Mike Conway. The defeat of subsidy reform comes as a new analysis reveals yet another way that farm subsidies are an abomination. The analysis, published this week by The Daily Yonder, a rural news site, reveals that 8 of the top 10 congressional districts for farm subsidies, in terms of dollars per year, are represented in Congress by members of the party of fiscal restraint. Top among the group is the statewide district of North Dakota, Representative Kevin Cramer. The farmers in his district receive more than $381 million in subsidies a year. Playing with that data yields some absurd results. For example, all told, North Dakota receives more than 500 in subsidies for every state resident. North Dakota farms receive an average of more than $15,000 per year in federal farm subsidies. Perhaps most galling in this, if subsidies were a crop, then USDA data show that North Dakota's hardworking subsidy farmers would be the state's fourth largest in terms of the dollar value of their production, trailing only soybeans, wheat, corn, and canola, while easily edging out hay, beans, potatoes, sunflowers, barley, peas, lentils, flax seeds, oats, safflower, and sugar beets. Still, the final version of the farm bill might not be all bad. Ooh, there is hope. There's hope coming up. Representative Morgan Griffith took to the pages of the Augusta Free Press with a real peach of a piece of the virtues of the farm bill as a mean to support farmers and similars. But Griffith also used the piece to push for one of the few potential bright spots in this farm bill, the possibility to end what he rightly labels the illogical and unproductive ban on raising hemp. In fact, farmers around the country are hopeful the nation's hemp ban may fall with passage of this farm bill. We're optimistic that the 2018 farm bill will include hemp legalization, Jonathan Miller, general counsel for a group that represents hemp companies, told UPI. So let's hope so. But will farm subsidies ever die? Probably not. They're a game Congress continues to play with taxpayers' money, and that game is rigged to ensure hundreds of millions of Americans will always lose. So that was a little article that I found today that I want to share with you guys. So we hope, I mean, as libertarians, we always want like the most out of everything, but we also have to be realistic that we have to fight for the most, but try to gain every inch as possible.
Sure.
So we don't want all these subsidies, obviously. It's just taking people's money and redistributing it mm-hmm. elsewhere. And as libertarians, it's not a belief that we believe in. And so, but at least there's this a little hopeful aspect that the hemp ban will be lifted. And so, I mean, why can't people be able to grow hemp? It can right. be used for so many things. These people say straws hurt the environment. Well, let's start mm-hmm. Legalizing the production of hemp, and maybe we can have hemp straws. Right.
Well, one of the things I think, not early on, because they paid farmers not to grow mm-hmm. Products, but as it progressed, what they ended up doing was buying excess grains and that in case there were disasters and farmers couldn't supply to, you know, to an area. So they would supply, you know, send back the grain that they brought or whatever. But yeah, I don't believe in just paying farmers. So what they ended up doing in 1996, though, I was just reading on the internet, was they stopped subsidizing for not growing and then made them buy agricultural insurance.
Yes, yeah, that's what this bill was talking about, that they're subsidizing them through the purchase of insurance with the taxpayer money.
Yeah.
Yep.
And another reason that farm bill that they didn't pass this year was something like, what did it say, like $585 billion. And they were worried about the illegal immigrants who have farmland and giving them money when, you know, I mean, I there is thinking, even though it's wrong, that I mean, the premise that American farmers get money for, let's say, not growing, but why should we pay non-citizens money for not growing? So they defeated that because of, unless they pass immigration reform. So,
right. And like we said, we can't have open borders with a socialist, with all these social programs. So yeah. You can't fight the problem of people abusing the system when you have a system in place.
Right. By throwing money at it.
Right. So of course we're going to have those, we're going to have illegal immigrants coming over, trying to be farmers, getting those subsidies and abusing it, and our money going to them because we have those subsidies in place.
Mm-hmm.
And a way to combat that is to get rid of the subsidies. And if you're not going to get rid of them, then yes, we have to do immigration reform. Yeah. So it's kind of like a...
Everything's tied into each other.
Yeah, everything is tied into each other.
The only ones I feel sorry for are the dairy farmers, because they don't make hardly anything on the milk that they sell to the... because they're regulated on what they can sell.
Well, let's get rid of the regulations.
I know, that's right. Because they want milk to be a staple price, you know, mm-hmm. price. And they don't make a lot of money to begin with. And when the milk prices go down that they're allowed to get paid, I mean, they still have to pay for the grain and the upkeep of the cows and everything. And I feel sorry for them more than I do because any other kind of agriculture. But and they don't get subsidies either. So
yeah, unfortunately, I don't know what it's like to be a farmer.
I know, but I don't think I'd want to be.
No, I don't think I'd want to be a farmer
7 days a week.
That's hard work.
Every day of the year. Yeah, it is.
And then you're not even guaranteed a profit.
Yep.
To me, that, I mean, going into the farming industry, farming business, whatever, that's a risk that you're taking. And just like any other business, starting up your business, you shouldn't be guaranteed some sort of profit, because starting a business or anything like that is a risk. And that's a risk that you have to be willing to take, and we have to get rid of these safety nets.
Right.
I think, what is it, 62% of businesses fail within the first 5 years or something like that.
That's the 5 year period.
And so I look at farming as some sort of business. I mean, you're producing something and you're providing a service to people by producing that food. And so I don't think we should have safety net for them, just like I don't think we should have safety net for people starting up businesses. I think we should make it easier for them by cutting out regulations and all that good stuff. And that provides a little less risk. But I mean, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, if you're going to start a business, if you're going to go into farming or whatever, there's a risk to that. And
The number one industry in Saratoga County is agriculture. But if you notice on farms, I mean, people that farm and grow up on farms love it. Most farms are passed from one generation to the next. So the family stays in the business. I mean, they like to work the land. I don't know. So
they know it. They know the animals.
Except for the big farms, I think they just get it as a way to make money from the government. And I mean, mega farms, they buy out the small farmers and that. I don't know. I like small farms.
Support local.
Yeah, that's right. Buy local.
Buy local. Support your local farmers. Go to those farmer markets. So, speaking of all this socialism, these subsidies, all this good stuff, Venezuela has been in the news a lot lately, although they should have been in the news a long time ago. And I'm not sure how many people are up to date with that, really, other than like outside of like my libertarian circle of like just like everyday people that aren't in tune with like libertarian news. Of course, we've all been hearing about Venezuela, but like the mainstream media and mainstream public, average Joe probably has no idea about it. Maybe they've heard something recently, but it's been going on for a while. These people are just living lives of misery and destruction. I think, I can't remember the number, so don't quote me exactly, but I think it was their, I saw something about like 2.3, I can't remember if it was 1,000 or a million. I know it's a huge difference, but somebody has to check on that because I read it quick. They were fleeing Venezuela. Oh. Like 2.3 something people were fleeing Venezuela. And I can't remember if it was per week or per month. Mm-hmm. I really should have wrote it down, but I didn't. And that's where that is. So anyway, the people leaving Venezuela are obviously the people that still have a little bit of money left. So there's a lot of people there that can't leave. And would love to leave. So Venezuela is people are hungry, people are starving, there's no medicine around, their money is worthless, they have no food. It's really just a very, very terrible situation and place to be right now. So I have a little bit of I don't know which one I want to read here to you. This one's kind of short. I'll read this one.
But you know, the government is very wealthy.
People
have nothing because the government, I mean, they have big oil.
They're
one of the top oil producers, and they have it all. And here again with socialism, the people don't have anything.
Right. And that's how it goes. They say, we're going to help you. We're going to divide the money between everybody. And then it never goes to the people. It ends up funneling into the government, who says they're going to redistribute it, and then it doesn't go to the people. Which actually, this brings up an interesting little thing I was thinking about the other day as I'm school shopping for Noah. He's got on his list a few typical things. He's got like crayons, scissors, glue sticks, pencil box and folders, a notebook and a binder. Typical things. I would have thought a lot more, like maybe markers, colored pencils, and paper, and I don't know. But there is a lot less of like actual supplies then there were like other things like sanitary and cleaning supplies. There was I needed to buy 3 boxes of tissues, and like I myself, like, I don't mind, just because like, hey, the school needs it, so mm-hmm. if they're asking every parent to help out, whatever, I'll help out. But I was thinking about this, and I'll get to the viewpoint that I was thinking about it. But anyway, I had to get 3 boxes of tissues, a tub of Clorox wipes, hand soap, like in a pump bottle. It was very specific, hand soap and a pump bottle. Hmm. And there was another thing on the list, and I can't really remember what it was, but it was some other like cleaning product or something. But either way,
it's a lot of stuff.
There was stuff on there that's not really, that I wouldn't consider school supplies for my child. Like, okay, yeah, I'm going to help out the class. We're all helping out the class, whatever. But some of these things, like, you know, soap, Clorox wipes, those are the kinds of things, and tissue boxes. Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of things that the school itself is supposed to provide for the students. And if I'm not mistaken, those are the kinds of things that our taxpayers in our school district pay for, where their tax money goes to for the public school, hence public school, the word public, which means it's taxpayer funded. So I got to thinking, hey, wait a minute. How come we increase the budget every year and we get more taxes out of people, and you say that this money is going towards the school and the stuff mm-hmm. that the school needs, but how come I get the school supply list and I'm purchasing the stuff that right. my money is supposed to be going to?
Right, your tax money.
So am I paying for this twice? So that's what I started thinking about. And that's kind of like the whole idea of socialism, where you get into this idea where the government's like, okay, we need to pay more taxes and take more of your hard-earned money out of your paychecks to support X, Y, and Z program. And so you funnel all of that more money in. And then eventually you start to realize that, hey, we still don't have good roads.
Right.
Hey, healthcare still sucks. Like, and in Venezuela, they started having a public healthcare system. And all of a sudden, it was just hard to get healthcare. Medicine started going scarce. It's not possible to provide healthcare to every single individual in an area if it's public and if it's state run, government run. You can't provide quality service fast and efficiently. And you see that with the DMV. You can take that model and apply it to anything if you were to make it government run. Right. But so you start taking all this money and start realizing that, hey, it's not going to these things. What is it going to? And it's going to be going to, in a socialist society, it's going to be going to the government officials. And that's what happens. And they really don't care. And so we have this situation going on in Venezuela where people I may be wrong, but I believe they're unarmed too now. Mm-hmm. They were disarmed a while ago, mm-hmm. Taking away their rights of arms. Yeah. And it's kind of scary to like see that like we're kind of going that way. We keep getting more rights taken away for our right to bear arms. They keep trying to take rights away there. And then we keep implementing more socialist programs. And like it's just a slow steps.
Well, a great example of that is what happened in Germany under Hitler. They started introducing more social programs. They took weapons away from the entire population mm-hmm. so that when he took over, they couldn't fight back.
Right. And so I don't understand, like, you know, the old saying, history repeats itself.
Yeah.
So why aren't we looking at these things and deciding, hey, maybe we should do something different? This clearly didn't work in like 6 other places.
But politicians make money.
They make money off of it.
They can make more money. That's why history repeats itself, because they don't really want to do what happened, they think they can make more money off of it themselves. Hey, I just want to give you a figure that you did cite correctly. In 1915, 44,615 people left Venezuela. In 2017, it grew to 470,000. And so far in 2018, it's over 1 million. I mean, and we're only into the eighth month of the year.
Right,
so
yeah.
It's pretty much tripled since last year.
Yeah, I was thinking it said in the millions, and I just wasn't really sure.
Yeah.
But that it's crazy. If you're having that amount of people fleeing a certain place, there's clearly something wrong. I mean, we look at New York, the amount of people fleeing New York,
yep.
because New York is such a terrible place to
and
be.
And California.
And I know Larry Sharp was talking about that just so many people are leaving New York, so many people that could really help change things.
Sure.
They want it to be different.
And
then that just leaves the people that want it to stay the same.
Yeah, I know.
So it's so hard
people
to change.
People that want to control the other people.
Right.
You know, yeah, and guess where the people from Venezuela are going to? This article, Colombia.
Yeah,
so now they're going to a drug-ridden, and then they'll probably end up in the drug, you know, there'll be drug mules or whatever for Colombians. I mean, that's one country I would want to stay away from.
Yeah, you know.
You talked about the taxes, though. Like, you had to buy school supplies. We don't realize that there's progressive taxes.
Right.
And you gave a really good example on that. And here's another one. Now, you buy a car, a brand new car, and you're paying, let's say, 7% tax. You pay 7% of the total of that car.
Mm-hmm.
If it's, let's say, $30,000, just, you know. So you go to sell it in 2 years, and you sell it for $24,000. Somebody has to pay 7% on that $24,000 when it was paid for.
When that tax was already paid.
Before.
Yeah.
So that, you know, these progressive taxes that they put on, people don't really think about them. I mean, you think about, yeah, I have to pay sales tax. Well, the sales tax is already paid on that whole amount of money on the car. So if that car sold like five times, tax is paid five times on that car and when they've already been paid. So there's a lot of things like that, just like you said, about the supplies from the school. We have all these progressive taxes that people don't think anything about.
Yeah, and that they just keep getting raised and raised every year. And so I really don't see an improvement in the school system, because why every year am I having to buy more and more stuff that the school's supposed to provide the teachers with? And it's not the teacher's fault. I absolutely don't like when I see parents complaining about, oh, these teachers ask too much of us. We have to buy all their Expo markers. Well, their school's not providing them with the budget to have that have what they need. And so all this tax money, what it's going to is the adding more administrators,
mm-hmm.
adding more tests, adding people to grade those tests and getting people on boards for those tests to make the tests. And it's not going to what it should be going to.
See, I never vote for a school budget unless, if they don't eliminate administrators' jobs, one, two, or three, I don't vote yes on the budget.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where you have to cut. And the first thing they do if a budget doesn't pass and they have to have another vote is, well, we're going to eliminate music. We're going to eliminate some of the sports. It's always the kids that get hurt.
And it's never the administrators.
Right. They may have, I had a principal and a vice principal in high school. Now they've got, you look at Saratoga, they probably got six principals and five vice principals. I mean, come on. And
like,
they're making
$100,000
a year. Yeah, I know, but
they don't need
two
that.
Maybe, you know?
Yeah, right. They're overstepping their boundaries. I had something here and I'm not sure where it went. maybe I didn't print it out. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said something strange, and I really wish I remembered exactly what it said. I didn't bring my laptop today, so I'm like down for the count on looking that up. So I'll post it on the Facebook page if I think about it. What was I gonna do? So Venezuela. Oh, here it is. 2.3 million Venezuelans have left their country, with more than 1.5 living in other South American countries. There we go. Found it.
See.
So I knew I read that somewhere. And so this crisis has been happening in Venezuela since 2014. And a lot of it has to do with the hyperinflation and their socialist dictator. And so this exodus from Venezuela is one of the biggest mass displacements in the history of Latin America. Let's see. People are leaving in order to survive. We know that. And this does show a map of the migration too. They're also coming to Florida.
Yeah.
Also coming into Florida, trying to seek refuge. They're going down to Argentina. And going through
Mexico to get in over, the southern states.
Mm-hmm.
But as your producer, I try to find the figures for you during the show. That's what I'm here for.
I appreciate it.
Well, that's what a producer does.
It is. I will try to find that Ocasio-Cortez quote for you. It was absolutely ridiculous. I think Bernie Sanders was in the picture too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was her and him saying something about Venezuela and something about socialism. And it just totally contradicted itself.
They're big on that democratic socialism, which I don't understand what that term is. And yeah, I don't think anybody really does.
So we're going to cut it short. And so next time we'll talk about Alex Jones and other alt-right and conservative voices being banned and punished for what they're saying on social media platforms, which a little bit of input, social media is their own companies. They can decide what to do, what they want on there. B, I don't think it's right, but I mean, they have a right, but we'll get into that. And then I also wanted to talk about Omarosa.
Mm-hmm.
And the tapes. So that's going to be a good piece for next time. Maybe more will come out and we'll have some more to talk about Omarosa.
Well, we'll be back weekly starting next week.
Yep.
Yeah, starting next week, we'll be back weekly on our regular weekly schedule. And thank goodness the track is over. It puts a crimp in a lot of people's lives.
And yeah, I think that's all. So thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time.